The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be with you. Time slipping by so often. By the way, I hope you're visiting ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com, and cluing in there because we have had some great guests over at the Rumble DC studio. I was live with Mike Waller, the author of Big Intel, for almost an hour-long kind of book notes conversation. It was great. ProAmericaReport.com. Check it out there and a lot more. Over on Rumble, if you go to Rumble, it's the Pro America Report. Also, you can do a search there. Eagle Ed Martin is my nom de guerre during the social media, during the Rumble over there. Okay, let me see if I get this right. You ready? Dr. Ben Carson is the American dream. Vice President Kamala Harris is the American nightmare. Now, let me show you what I mean. The news is out now. I mean, this guy, Chris Rufo, he's unbelievable. What an extraordinary researcher this guy is. He goes and does this research. He's running all kinds of programs to see if he can figure out who's lying and who's fraudulent and everything else. It's amazing. And one of the things he found out was that the one of the top UCLA medical school officials, her name is Natalie Perry, and she's the UCLA Medical School's DEI lead. That's what they call these people, DEI lead, not the executive director of the DEI office. It's DEI lead. And him and Chris Rufo, as well as Luke Rosiak. Luke Rosiak actually lives in Northern Virginia. I know him from my neighborhood, actually. Really good guy. Wife is really neat. Nice family man. He's a great writer and a researcher. They found this out. They discovered that this DEI lead, Natalie Perry, plagiarized her only published academic paper, plagiarized like the whole thing, and they put it out there. So again, it's roiling the conversations about DEI, because DEI is a fraud. And unfortunately, it's not only a fraud designed to put people in positions where there shouldn't even be a position, but it also stigmatizes people who shouldn't be stigmatized. That, you know, that if you're an African-American, you go to Harvard, you're going to be looked at like you didn't deserve it, because it looks like a lot of times there was other things going on. So it's not fair. It's tearing the country apart. It's a mistake. It's DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI is what it stands for. So as that's happening, I keep thinking about how I want to describe again to you the power of Dr. Ben Carson and his life. Born into pretty much, you know, basic poverty. I wouldn't want to go too far and say abject poverty or anything, but born into poverty. His mother raised he and his brother, and she put a priority on education and reading. And if you read or listen to him talk about his life, he basically had lots of emotional issues. He was angry when he was young. He was unhappy in many ways. And he was a believer early in his life, a man of faith, boy of faith. And he just decided, and you know, because his mother, I think he probably would attribute that, he was going to become someone who succeeded. And so out of the American nightmare of bad schools, broken families, all these things, Detroit, you know, that's supposed to be the nightmare, right? That you have all these problems. Here comes a man who goes to the highest levels of education and becomes what is generally described as one of the greatest greatest surgeons in the world. He pioneers and perfects brain surgery on children, surgery that takes hours and hours of concentration and a level of surgical skill that's unparalleled in human history. And he does that, a black man from poverty, from a tough situation, with all kinds of issues in his past. And what does he do? He just becomes the absolute best. He's the best at something that no one's ever even been able to be good at. He's the best at it. He marries a woman, Candy Carson. Everybody that's ever met her, I've only met her twice, but everyone that meets her, she's smart, she's nice, she's kind of have a family. She and her husband, Dr. Carson, raises family. He is an incredible success. He earns everything he does by hard work, by attention to detail, by groundbreaking, painstaking progress. That's the story of Dr. Ben Carson. He is the American dream. He is the American dream personified. He's actually a member. There's a famous organization called the Horatio Alger Society that was started by Norman Vincent Peale, the late Norman Vincent Peale, the extraordinary preacher who preached about, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, quoting that scripture. Wrote a famous book, The Power of Positive Thinking. Almost every chapter, every page for sure, has reference to Christ and the life of Christ and the words of Christ, the teaching of Christ. There's never been a better example of the American dream, the American success, than Dr. Ben Carson. Extraordinary. Now contrast that with Kamala Harris. Now, I think people are silly and foolish when they say so-and-so, who is at the highest levels of politics, is not smart. They say they're dumb. You know, I used to protest when people say Hillary Clinton's dumb. She may not be nice. She may be unkind. She may be uncharitable. At the highest level of politics, you have to have a certain amount of wits about you. That's just true. Kamala Harris is the opposite of the American dream. Nobody thinks that she made it to the top because she was really good at any one thing. What she was good at was politics. What she was good at was identity politics. What she was good at is using her positions for her advantage. So, for example, when she was Attorney General of the state of California, she prosecuted parents for truancy. Do you know who has a priority for prosecuting parents for truancy? In other words, kids are in failing schools. Kids are failing. And Kamala would go after the parents and try to prosecute the parents for their kids not showing up into failing schools. Do you know who that priority is for? The teachers' unions. Because you know what happens if there's truancy in the schools? The schools don't get to count the students as present for the purposes of the dollars that they get from the state. Kamala Harris was promoted because she was a woman. Sometimes she was promoted because she was African-American. Sometimes she was promoted because she was Indian-American. Sometimes she couldn't be sure. Sometimes she'd use language that sounds like she was from the streets. Sometimes she would sound like she was from the highfalutin schools. She went to a historically black college and makes a huge deal about that. She did not go to the highest end schools. She did not get the highest grades. She did not succeed on her merit like Ben Carson did. She is the emblem. She was picked because either she was friends with Joe Biden's son. That's one speculation. Or more likely, because they wanted to check the boxes, because he, Joe Biden, is an old white guy, and they're trying to play the game of politics. The point here is, if you look up in America and you look at these two people, Dr. Ben Carson, and you say, whoa, excellence. When push came to shove, not only was he having a family with his wife, but he was spending his time on scholarships for young kids, on teaching kids reading and how to make it for themselves. And Kamala Harris never had children of her own. I give her credit. Her husband, who she married, had adult children of his own. She sort of adopted into them, but she didn't raise a family. And when push came to shove, she talks about education, talks about kids as something that they need to do to teach them the right things about America being not a good place. But when it comes to it, what she's really doing is carrying the water for the teachers unions. Truancy. Imagine being in Oakland or Sacramento or L.A. and your kids are trying to go to school and it's not a good school and the kids are out of control and you're all kinds of poverty and you're going after parents for truancy. And you've got an attorney general, when it's convenient, she'll crack down on drug use and send people, poor people, to jail. And then when it's convenient, she'll complain about the unfairness of law enforcement against black people and Black Lives Matter and defund the police. If there's ever been a better contrast of America and the American dream and the American nightmare that is DEI, for the American dream, I nominate Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson. And for DEI, the nasty, hate-filled, empty DEI, Kamala Harris. Pretty obvious. Seems pretty true. Hard to dispute. The contrast couldn't be bigger. And by the way, if you think I'm circling back again, there is one man who has a VP candidate, a nominee, would make clear one party is for the American dream. The other party is for DEI. Pretty good contrast. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Ed Martin, Pro America Report, back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Catching up, we've had him on the show before, Josiah Lippincott. He's a retired Marine who is now finishing his PhD studies over at Hillsdale College. We love Hillsdale College. And as importantly for you all, you can go to his Substack, which is lippincott.substack.com. It's called Regime Critic. And his writings are there. His background is there. It's a very meaty one. I go to Substack quite a bit. So welcome back, Josiah. How are you, sir?
Ed, I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, over on your Substack, you're writing about this, but this I initially saw this on American Greatness, amgreatness.com. I'll put a link up to the column. Deportations would lower housing prices by Josiah Lippincott. And the subheadline, deporting illegal immigrants and reducing the number of foreigners in this country is a good neighbor policy. It's the kind of moderate centrist solution that should be the basis of bipartisan outreach or bipartisan reach. So, all right. Walk me through first, what's the reality? What are the numbers look like? I know on your Substack, I can see you're charting things out. So walk me through this.
Yeah, so I just saw today, this morning, that the median mortgage payment in America rose to an all-time high today of $2,700 a month. And for people who own a house for the first time, when you have interest rates that are closing in at 8%, the sticker price for a house is $400,000 a year. You know, if you put down the median down payment of $50,000, you're looking at about a $1.1 million outlay over the course of a 30-year loan. And what that means is that to buy an average house in America today, you are signing yourself up for $1 million in debt. And I just don't think that housing market is currently sustainable. We need solutions. And if we don't get them, it's going to be politically explosive down the line. And that's the key point in all of this.
So I see that, and I think that's getting, you know, I don't know if you follow Mike Cernovich on Twitter for a long time now. It's X, of course, and he's kind of wonderfully, he's got a great style and sensibility. But one of the things I noticed a post recently, he said something like, when he was a young man, he lived a block from the beach, and now you could, and he was 23 or 5 or whatever, he went to law school, I think, but you know, you could, you didn't have a lot of money left over, but you could do that. You can't do that anymore. You can't buy at the beach. You can't even rent at the beach because of the way things. So something went, went off balance. But let me just play the devil's advocate. Can you deport enough people to change that market? Is that real? Do the numbers hold?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the last 4 years of the Biden presidency, and the numbers, of course, they don't know the full numbers. But what I've seen is that there's about 8 million foreigners, a combination of legal and illegal immigrants who've poured into the country over the last 4 years. And there's been some research showing that a lot of these immigrants have been aimed for red state areas. And it's kind of obvious what's happening. Democrats want to get voters and big business wants to lower wages. And so you have two incentives that allow the American Uniparty to join forces to screw over the ordinary American, both in their voting and economic power. So but the point is, as quickly as these people came to America, they could leave. And if you change a few of the incentives around migration to America, if you expect foreigners to do more, to contribute to the country, to speak English, you're going to make it so that people who are going to come here are going to have to meet a high standard. And right now there is no standard. So American citizenship is being degraded. The value is declining. A lot of migrants come to America and then they send money back abroad, and they're repatriating that money. And the point is, if you just taxed money going out of the country, let's say you could pick any number, but let's say you pick 90%, like you can't send this money abroad. If you did that alone, mercenary migrants, migrants who are coming only for sheer economic reasons, would leave. And I think citizenship is more valuable than just a dollar sign. It has a spiritual value. Being an American isn't just being part of a shared tax zone or an economic zone. So I think we need to have a new conception of citizenship, and that's not simply monetary. And we also need a conception of citizenship that's good for ordinary Americans.
We're talking again with Josiah Lippincott. Again, his Substack is lippincott.substack.com, a regime critic. Lots of notes there, lots of posts there, lots you can get. You can subscribe initially for no cost. You can support him and his efforts. So I do think this, I will say this, and I noticed this in some of your writing, how you're talking about it. We have to stretch the fake news and the propaganda, and use a regime critic as your title. The regime wants to tell us that deportation is evil and wants to load the word with all sorts of negative connotations and meaning. And one of the things I think your piece does is it puts some meaning on it that's different, but also unload some of that. Like, hey, because if you're going to have that, I think it is a real policy. When you have 10 million, 15 million that have come, you got to have some. It's not going to be enough to say, well, we just won't let it happen again. What do you mean? I mean, the rumor around the Capitol right now is that Joe Biden is going to do some sort of blanket amnesty for people that are here, sort of a waiver of the government's opposition to claims of asylum, and that would be a de facto amnesty. We just can't survive, is your point. You mentioned one phrase in there, though, and I know you served in the Marines, so you know what it's like to be part of an ethos. You go to Hillsdale, which has a very particular, I think, sense of American history, whether it's Dr. Arne or others. You said we need a new conception of citizenship. Did you mean that? Or do you mean we need to recover what we had? Or maybe did what we had in the past, was it happening without us sort of having to articulate it, and we better articulate it now?
Well, no, what I mean by that is it's new to us. The idea of citizenship being serious, that borders are serious, that membership of a political community is a serious thing, and it's a choice. And it should be a choice made both by the person who becomes a citizen, but also by the political community. So when you have mass migration in the way that America has it, the population was never asked to consent to this. When the Hart-Celler Act was passed in 1965, it radically changed America's immigration policy. But the crazy thing was that no one campaigned on a dramatic demographic change to the United States. In fact, they said the exact opposite would happen. So at the bare level of consent, of the consent of the governed, our immigration policy is illegitimate. It's not rooted in telling the truth to voters and having an earnest political debate. So when I say I want a new conception of citizenship, I want us to revitalize our understanding of what our country is. And that'll mean going back to some of our principles, which would be new to us. It's been a really long time since we've had a vibrant, true sense of citizenship. So that's what I mean when I say we should refocus in that way.
Josiah Lippincott, his Substack is lippincott.substack.com. Regime critic there, and his piece is over at americangreatness.com. You wrote this one. That's get, you know, American Greatness is going to get you some attention in addition to your Substack. Sure. Much pushback?
You know, of course, I always receive pushback. There's always people who want to accuse me of being a terrible person and not caring about foreigners. And I have the exact opposite view. You know, I just have, I'm really hard-headed. There are limitations. Not everybody can be an American citizen. Not everyone should be one. That doesn't mean that someone's evil because they're not an American. It means we need to have a clear-eyed, hard-headed view of what it means to have a country. And to do that, we need to be willing to speak the truth, which is we have immigration laws. We should enforce them. By enforcing immigration laws, ordinary Americans would benefit. The fewer people there are in America, the cheaper housing will be. That's just a reality, supply and demand. And I care about young families being able to purchase homes. So, yes, if that means saying something that makes some people sad, then I'll say it because I care about my country. So
Josiah, spoken like a true Marine, Josiah Lippincott, again, lippincott.substack.com. One encouragement I make to you is that it, for lots of reasons that have to do with just things go in the way they go, we are having to rediscover, recover, redefine, you know, articulate what citizenship means. I was just looking, it's weird. I wasn't preparing for this part of my interviews today, but I was just looking at Phyllis Schlafly, my old boss, and I'll send it to you, Josiah. She wrote about citizenship. And she said, dual citizenship, that you can't have that because at some point, if you're a citizen of two nations, if they fight, you have to choose. And so the idea of creating something or demeaning something into, as you point out, participation in an economic unit, as opposed to citizenship. You know, if you want to be a participant in a club, you can be a participant in a club. If you're a citizen, that's got a character that's very different. So I think you're onto something there. Unfortunately, we're out of time here. So thank you, Josiah, for doing that. And again, it's lippincott.substack.com. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Have a good one.
All right. We'll take a break, everybody, and we will be right back. A fascinating topic. Really good writer and thinker and fearless in saying things that he sees and therefore getting people thinking. So we will put all that up on social media. We'll take a break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Great to be together. And I have spoken before about the importance of the Crime Prevention Research Center, crimeresearch.org. You can go there and see a lot of background and research. So you're not just taking my word for it, anyone else's word for it. You see the backup. Dr. John Lott is the economist and the man behind the website and much of the research. He worked in the Trump administration as a senior advisor in the Office of Justice and Office of Legal Policy. He has been an educator and teacher all across the country and all across the world. Dr. Lott, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Great to talk to you again, Ed. Thanks for having me on.
Broadly speaking, Dr. Lott, you know, after COVID, I think a lot of people, not just conservatives, but conservatives too, have come to say, you know what, I'm no longer going to listen to the quote experts. They say X, I don't believe them anymore. Now, while that is good, a hefty dose of skepticism about the so-called experts who say X, Y, Z, P, D, Q, and almost always advance their agenda. It also leads to a funny thing where, you know, you're an expert. And one of the powerful things about your leadership is you're an expert. And says, hey, wait a second, slow down, look at this data. I mean, we don't want a world where we doubt everything, right?
I mean, there is a truth out there.
Right.
You know, we'd be in trouble if there wasn't. Look, the bottom line is that there is a lot of misinformation out there, but, you know, there are numbers that you can look at to try to disentangle these things. So I'll give you one example that kind of fits what you're saying. And that is recently there have been a lot of news articles saying that crime is falling, but yet people are somehow deluded into thinking that violent crime is increasing. And And so the media, and headline after headline and article after article, tries to explain that, well, people are just mistaken. They don't know what's going on. I think the reverse is true. I think that the media, either because they just don't understand the statistics and how they're put together, don't have as accurate of an image about what's happening compared to the general public. And so what you have to understand is that there are two types of crime data that we have out there. There's the FBI Uniform Crime Reports. This is data based on crimes reported to police. And then there is something called the National Crime Victimization Survey, which surveys about 240,000 people each year. And the point of the survey is to try to get numbers on both reported and unreported crime. Most violent crime in the United States is not reported to the police. And the thing is, we know that the rate that people report crime to police varies in systematic ways. For example, if arrest rates go down, where people aren't being prosecuted for the crimes that they committed, it reduces the incentives for people to go and take the time to go through the process to go and report crimes to the police. And so what's happened over the last few years is we've seen an unbelievable drop in arrest rates. Right. You look at cities over a million in population. In the 5 years before COVID, from 2015 to 2019, 44% of violent crimes reported violent crimes result in arrest. It's fallen each year afterwards, and by 2022, it was down to 20%. So that's arrests for violent crimes went from 44% of reported crimes to 20% of reported crimes. And when you consider the fact that most violent crimes aren't reported to the police, only about 8% of all violent crimes reported and non-reported resulted in arrest. And not all those resulted in charges, and obviously not all those resulted in prosecutions, and not all those resulted in convictions. So what's happened is that as there's been this huge drop in arrests, and it's also been for cities as a whole, though not quite as dramatic as it has been for the larger cities, people haven't been reporting crimes to the police. And so you look at the data for 2021 and 2022, according to reported crimes that the FBI collects, that fell by 2% for violent crimes. At the same time, the National Crime Victimization Survey indicates that total violent crimes reported and non-reported increased by 42%, which is mind-boggling number. I mean, all these numbers are numbers I've never seen anything even remotely similar to it in the past. And so, you know, you look at it and you say, well, the media, when they go and look at these numbers, the only thing they're looking at is reported crimes to the police. They don't seem to recognize that reported crimes are, you know, well less than half of all violent crimes. Most violent crimes aren't reported. And they don't seem to understand that they're changing in certain systematic ways because we've had the collapse of law enforcement in this country. I mean, when you only have 8% of all violent crimes resulting in an arrest, that's startling. And for property crimes, it's even worse. Only one, and for the large cities over a million in population, only 1% of all total property crimes reported and non-reported resulted in an arrest. And so, and again, even that 1%, not all those are charged, not all those are prosecuted, and not all those who are prosecuted are convicted. So the risk for a criminal in a large city committing a property crime is like nothing. It's right, like pretty zero.
pretty low.
And so
crimeresearch.org is a website. Dr. John Lott is our guest. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't want to run out of time. I think you proved my point in this sense. And by the way, what Dr. Lott just talked about, there's a great post on crimeresearch.org. I'll put a link to it that explains exactly what he's talking about. But I think I kind of worry that you proved my point in this sense is everything we're told by somebody is they're spinning us, right? And I guess the question is, what do we do now? I mean, you know, what is the best path forward on policy that gives us, you know, or is it maybe not do anything? Don't get suckered into doing something when there's not something to fix.
Well, there's something to fix. And what's happened is you've had police funds have been cut. You've had changes in the rules for policing. You've had prosecutors in many urban areas who are refusing to prosecute violent criminals. Look, I mean, it's not just the fact that people aren't reporting crimes to the police. It's also that you've demoralized the police. I mean, the police may think, what's the point of arresting somebody if they're going to be released immediately with no charges against them as soon as they arrest them? And so that also reduces the number of arrests that are being made. And then you've had liberal judges who have been releasing large number of inmates between 2020 and 2022. Look, crime prevention is a local issue. Decisions about the number of police and policing policies are made by city councils and mayors. You have issues about prosecutors, district attorneys are elected locally. Judges are overwhelmingly elected locally. And so, you know, you're in a situation where, you know, you have all these decisions being made locally. So could something be done? Yeah. What you have to do is you have to make it risky for criminals to commit crimes. This isn't rocket science. If you make it riskier for criminals to commit crime, there'll be less crime that's going to be occurring. I mean, we've done the opposite, you know, so like in some areas, you know, in California, you can steal up to $949. And you're not going to be arrested. And you can do it multiple times during the day. You can just go in and out of the store, you know. But as long as each time you leave the store, you're not taking more than $949, then they're not going to arrest you. And then people go and sell the stuff that they've stolen on eBay. Right. And, you know, it makes huge amounts of money and they don't face any penalties for it.
Yeah, that's the key. I think you're right about the understanding behavior. If you raise the cost of doing something, people, it will change behavior. That's the only way to do it. Unfortunately, Dr. John Lott, we are out of time. It goes fast when you're talking to him. I can't emphasize enough to people. Crimeresearch.org is the place to go. His writing's there. His team is there. They have a bunch of folks, and it's very powerful to see the backup, the Crime Prevention Research Center, and it's crimeresearch.org. We got to take a break. I'll put that link up on social media. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, presenting a daily conservative perspective since 1983, continuing the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. And now, from the archives of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, here is Phyllis Schlafly.
Several state legislatures are considering resolutions to use a never-before-used power in our Constitution's Article 5 to petition Congress to call a new national convention to amend the U.S. Constitution. Most of these resolutions say they want the convention to consider only the one amendment that state is pushing. However, various state resolutions are supporting different amendments. Some specify that the one amendment to be considered must be the repeal amendment to allow states to repeal an act of Congress. Others want the one amendment to be debt limitation. Others want a balanced budget amendment. Some want to banish the Electoral College. Others want to abolish the 17th Amendment. And one proposal is for 10 amendments. You can be sure that many special interest groups will also be pushing their own agendas. You can bet that a convention will attract activists demanding union rights, gay rights, gun control, abortion rights, ERA, and D.C. statehood. Calling a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution would be a plunge into chaos because nobody can predict what the convention would actually do. Anyone who has ever attended a national political convention knows very well that the guy with the gavel exercises ruthless power. I've attended 15 Republican national conventions, plus many other national, state, and district political conventions, and I've seen every kind of high-handed tactic and rule broken with the bang of the gavel, including cutting off mics, recognizing only pre-chosen delegates, expelling duly elected delegates they don't want, cheating on credentials and rules, fixing the voting machines, and having big, strong thugs patrolling aisles to prevent delegates from getting out of their seats and conversing with other delegations. We don't want a new convention about the Constitution.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Anyone pushing for a constitutional convention doesn't have a full appreciation for the brilliance and beauty of the original document ratified back in 1788. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, you'll find all kinds of reasons why a con could be a disaster for the American way of life. Check out PhyllisSchlafly.com and join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Height stepping in here real quick to wrap up the show for Mr. Ed Martin. Thank you for being with us today. What a great show. A couple of good guests. And, of course, we kicked off the day with some enlightening, though not so good news about what's happening. Absolutely incredible. And I wanted to wrap up on that and talk just a teeny bit about it. Another couple of things that I think you need to know. But before we do that, let me remind you, go to ProAmericaReport.com. ProAmericaReport.com is where you're going to find Ed's Substack, a lot of the things he's writing about, some other things, including some special reporting this week, as well as going and following him at Eagle Ed Martin, at Eagle Ed Martin on X. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We have a little bit to talk about I want to tell you about. And then also, of course, go to PhyllisSchlafly.com. PhyllisSchlafly.com is where you're going to find the archives of this program. You'll find the sign up for the Wink email, what you need to know into your inbox every single morning, weekday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern, 7 Central, and all the other time zones concurrently. So go there. Those two websites, you don't want to miss them. But wrapping up the show today, man, so much has happened. The ongoing coverage, the media circus, the zoo, basically, that is happening right now in New York City. We've talked about it endlessly. I've been on the radio a bunch today. Ed has been online. We've been doing broadcasts. He's been doing a ton of stuff. There is so much happening that you need to know about and see. Let me just give you a couple of things for the rest of the week, at least, although this trial is certainly, you know, this is going to go on for quite a while here. Let me give you a couple of places to go to see, and then I want to make a couple of points about what we're talking about, because maybe, you know, you hear the wink that I gave this what you need to know of the political assassination of a president, and you wonder, is it really that big of a deal? Is this some sort of cataclysmic event? Well, I think so, and I'll explain why. But just as a matter of making sure you have the most up-to-date information, let me give you a couple of really, really good sources that are doing a lot of talking and working this week. First of all, make sure you're following Ed on Twitter, at Eagle Ed Martin. Excuse me, on X, I guess. We're not supposed to say Twitter anymore. Make sure you're following him, at Eagle Ed Martin on X. He is doing a lot of work, including some live broadcasts with folks there in New York. You don't want to miss out on those. Those are really, really neat. Of course, you'll be able to go from his Twitter page, his X page, whatever you want to call it, and move into a couple of other areas where those broadcasts are happening. But one of them, you will want to follow Paul Ingrassi on Twitter. Paul Ingrassia, who we've had on the Pro America Report here, a good friend of the show. He is doing a lot of live reporting from New York. You want to go and follow him for some on-the-ground stuff, see what's happening. And then, of course, another one of our favorites here on the program, someone I highly recommend you follow this week during the opening of these proceedings as it all kicks off, is Mike Davis of the Article 3 Project. He is at Mr. DDMIA, MR, DDMIA on Twitter.
you want to go and follow him. Of course, also Paul Ingracia is at Paul Ingracia. That's two S's, I-N-G-R-A-S-S-I-A, at Paul Ingracia, and at Mike Davis, at Mr. D-D-M-I-A. Those are two places you want to go and follow. In addition to Ed, you will get some really crystal clear commentary. You'll get a good understanding of what's going on. There's some incredible legal background and political background amongst those three individuals, particularly. And I tell you what, I mean, that's going to be my go-to sources in addition to a bunch of others. But that's the case. That's the stuff. That's where you want to go to stay updated on everything that is happening this week. Now, let me dive into just a wee bit of an explanation. I want to shore up something that I said here at the beginning. We talked about how it is, in my opinion, this is the incredible cataclysmic political event, the political assassination of a president of the United States, unlike anything that we have seen in our lifetimes. And I pray that we will ever see again, although I'm not as hopeful in that statement as I am confident in the first one. But just in these last couple of minutes, I want to make sure if you actually don't agree with me, if you don't see this as being that cataclysmic, if you don't see Donald Trump as this obvious choice that conservatives, that the right wing must make to go and fight the deep state, then let me tell you something that I think is incredibly important. We always hear this, you know, this upcoming election is the most important election of our lifetimes. I think that a lot of people have said that and meant it. And they've been probably not technically incorrect, but they've been overselling it. I think that a lot of people have said that and not truly meant it because they were hyping or trying to get your attention for something. However, I truly believe, and I think that you know as well, this year, this 2024 election cycle truly could be a civilizational event for the United States of America. We are witnessing actively our judicial branch pieces of it and our executive branch pieces of it suppressing Trump votes, suppressing and removing a candidate of the United States. And for what? For what? Let me tell you this. Of these felonies, these supposed felonies that Donald Trump is facing, it doesn't take very long going down the rabbit hole to see what drummed up, faked up, trumped up charges these things are. For instance, 11 of the felonies that Donald Trump is facing are for receiving an invoice in the mail. Receiving an invoice. He has 11 felony charges for receiving a piece of mail. Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me? And then you go down the list and realize 11 more of those charges are from them putting in from them putting an entry into their books for these 11 invoices that were sent. And then, of course, 11 times a check was paid out. You go down the list and see these, 80 something felonies that he's been charged. It's absolutely incredible. 11 of these felonies are simply for receiving a piece of mail, something that you don't have any control over. That's what they're doing to him. And if they do it to him, they can do it to you. They can do it to me. And I guarantee you they will. It's only a matter of time if we let this happen. Go and take a look. This is truly a cataclysmic, civilizational level event for the United States of America. I firmly believe we've got to pay attention. That's my final plea to you. Go and pay attention and see what's happening. Thanks for being with us today on the Pro America Report. Thanks to Ed for doing all the reporting and letting me host real quick. Thank you to Mason, my co-producer, and to you, most importantly, for listening and making this show what it is. We appreciate you, and we will see you back here on another installation of the Pro America Report tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.